We're glad you're joining us here at Common Thread Online. This is a recording of our community gathering, as we do each week, to think together about the spiritual journey. At the end of the lesson, we open the floor for discussion. We'd love to hear what you're thinking, too. Go to our community's Facebook page, post your thoughts. So, racial equity, we've seen again and again, is kept in place generation after generation by hidden systems. Health systems and food systems and employment systems and transportation systems and housing systems. For a lot of other system reasons, people of color are disproportionately renters and consequently disproportionately affected by this current storm of evictions. When I was feeling the feelings that I was describing during our meditation watching that story, given what I said, that feelings were a call to action, I contacted Katie Cardenas the next day. She's on our One Wake team, and she also co-chairs one of One Wake's groups, the housing group. And I asked her what our One Wake next step plans are, and here's what she told me. She told me that the co-chairs have been meeting with county housing leaders and municipalities within the county housing leaders, figuring out where we are around COVID, around money, and around housing. And when the county finalizes their strategy for addressing this eviction problem, One Wake will get that information and then get it to us, and then we will help shape that strategy according to the needs that we know exist in our communities. So that's happening. And at the same time, the working group is doing research on permanent affordable housing options for our county because we, after doing those 3,000 listening sessions, we determined that's one of the big pain points in our county, and that work was going on even before the pandemic. So if you'd like to be part of that group, what they're doing is really important. And that team will be meeting via Zoom on July 20th. I scheduled a post on our Facebook group. It should have just gone up a few minutes ago. And that has the registration link in it so that you can be involved in that meeting. Also on July 23rd, all the One Wake leaders, you know, when we gather for the big 300 people group, we're going to meet to talk about our nonpartisan Get Out the Vote project. I want you to hear that word. It is a nonpartisan effort. We're not trying to get Republicans or Democrats to register. We're trying to get large numbers of people to register as a way to demonstrate to our elected officials that we are organized enough to be able to put feet to our actions, because that carries weight. And we want to carry weight when we lobby on behalf of the families in our communities. Well, that meeting, that's on Zoom also, on July 23rd. Jim Luke and Angie Sciulli, they told me that we, Common Thread, we committed 10 to 15 people to be at that meeting. So please show up. That link also just posted. It's on our Facebook group, and both should go up on our website this week. So here now, small doable, big changes in our world, and none of us gets burned out individually as we participate. So I hope you'll participate. And finally, we just finished a lesson on why meditation matters in a crisis. So hey, let's meditate. To help, I created a shared Google document. You can go to it, put your name in it, and then tick the box any day you do a contemplative practice. The threshold is low, 5 minutes. Try for more, but tick the box if you do 5 minutes. We're going for consistency here. That link is on our community's Facebook group right now, and it's here in the live stream notes. But also this week, it'll go up on our website. So join in. And join in and maybe feel a little competitive because, you know, you really don't want me to be meditating better than you. And that's right. I'm talking to you, Jenny. All right. Let's begin our lesson. Where does tenacity come from? How do we become dogged in our commitment to what matters? What is the interior source of steadfast resolution in the face of stubborn resistance? Well, it turns out that's one of the hidden treasures in our tradition. So I want to start talking now for a few weeks about tenacity. Now, as we've been saying for some time, and especially since Ahmaud Arbery was shot, people of our time will be people who put their hands to the most important moral issue, the most important human issue of our time, racial inequity. And if there's any space that requires tenacity, stubborn resolve in the face of hardened resistance, that's it. Now, most Americans right now, most Christians, after the death of George Floyd, they see racism. They see, yes, it is a scourge in our society. And we have collectively acknowledged the problem. And we've pledged together to resist it. And we've done that in unprecedented ways, in the streets, with our families, at work, in our relationships. We really are living in a moment of historical possibility. But here's the thing. We must be tenacious, because racism is tenacious. It'll still be here when our current energy levels begin to subside. Systems and instincts are deeply embedded. They have roots that go deep to the core. And digging that deeply, that touches the very identity of who we are as a nation, and particularly who we are as white people. And digging that deeply into the core of our national character and into our own unarticulated blind spots about power and place and expectation, digging all that up and then looking at it and then mounting a spiritual endeavor to dismantle it, that requires tenacity. In the not too distant future, when our white people, our white Christian people energies begin to flag, here's what's there under the surface, ready to come cropping back up. The word Christian has become a negative word for a lot of people, and here's a little bit of why. The Barna Group is kind of the Gallup poll for churches. In survey after survey, we have learned that less than 40% of white Christians believe that the United States has a structural race problem. Isolated incidents, sure. A few bad apples, okay. Discrimination, yes. But comprehensive systems, no. Just last summer, before the unrest, their surveys found that only 35% of white Christians said that they were motivated to address racial injustice. The most important moral issue of our day, 35%. 60% of us didn't think that the minister should talk about race and repentance. 40% of us thought race should never even be mentioned in church because it's just too political. Now, of course, if you're a black Christian and you attend a black Christian church, you can imagine it's very different. It's easy to see sin is sin when you're the one being hurt by it. So again, we know how this goes. The energy of this moment will flag. And when it does, old habits will resurge. And resistance will reemerge. And thoughts will come up. And maybe they'll come up in our own minds. Thoughts like, are we still talking about this, really? But when we think those thoughts, racial inequity will still be here. No matter that we're tired, racial inequity will still be here. No matter that other priorities surface and begin to take up our attention, racial inequity will still be here. Our core sin will still be unturned from. So, people of our time, people dealing with the most important moral issue of our day, tenacious. Long obedience in the same direction. Dogged. Determined. Now, I've trained my news feed not to show me sources that are particularly biased on one or the other sides. But maybe because this article had the words Christian or race in it, my news feed gave it to me anyway. The title of the article is Why Black Christians Are Bracing for a White Lash. It tells the story of a Christian speaker, a black woman, Trillia Newbell. She speaks to a lot of white congregations, and she told the story of how hurtful and how blind white Christians often are, and how often she goes back to her hotel room and weeps. Well, the article says, black Christians are preparing themselves for when this current energy level begins to die down. They've watched it happen just too often. They've seen us dismiss their experience and get upset when they want to keep talking about racial inequity. They've watched us so often not believe them when they tell us that race is a problem, when they tell us that race is something church ought to be talking about. Well, as I read the article, it made me sad to hear the emotional preparation that black Christians are having to do to get themselves ready for us to let them down. How they are bracing themselves for when we white Christians get tired of all this race talk and we want to get back to normal. What an indictment that is on us. And the truth is, it's prudent on their part to do it, because given our track record, they ought to be guarding their hearts against us. I was talking to another white minister in town this week, and we were both calling our congregations, mostly white, to be full participants in repenting of our national sin. But he was telling me that white lash has already begun. Okay, minister man, thank you. Really, thank you. But that'll do. That's enough. Let's move on. People of our time will be part of dismantling the root problem of our national life, which means people of our time must become tireless in the face of resistance, even when that resistance comes from within ourselves. People of our time will have to be tenacious. Again, long obedience in the same direction. Again, dogged and determined. So, let's talk about tenacity. Let's talk about where it comes from, but also let's talk about what kills it off. And here's one big tenacity killer: getting worn down over time. Tenacity can be killed with one big hit, one overwhelming, overrunning hit. And when that happens, the same principles that we'll be talking about, they apply. But more commonly, tenacity gets killed off in 1,000 small hits, small incidents that wear us down over time. A night tossing with anxiety, followed by a hit of sorrow, followed by another hit of guilt, maybe a dose of worry about a child, yet another political argument with another family member. Denise was in a store this week, and a customer started yelling at the clerk because she asked him to wear a mask. It's happening a lot these days. Those things can become so demoralizing when we see how we are behaving. Take enough of these small hits, these discouraging and demoralizing hits. Have enough times when hope takes a shot or optimism gets undercut, and there emerges a low-grade, generalized state of malaise. And it turns out that low-grade, generalized state of malaise, that will kill tenacity. In last week's guided meditation, Maria told a story about a white coworker working toward racial inequity and getting it wrong. And I was struck when Maria described her own visceral cringing when she read about her coworker's experience, because she said, "I'm also stepping into this dismantling racial inequity part, and that means I also risk getting it wrong." And she said, "I know myself. And I know that any screw up, even small ones, boy, they can leave me out of sorts for days." Well, both of these, they're familiar territory for us. We all know about those. We all know about being worn down by 1,000 small hits. We all know how it feels to stew over our failures. And both of those, over time, will cut tenacity off at the knees. You know how our brains work. Demoralized brains don't do steadfastness. Discouraged brains don't do long obedience in the same direction. And if we've been beating ourselves up for days, what we're not doing at that point, tenacity. When tenacity gets worn down, the default is to avoid challenges. When we are worn down, we avoid taking risks. When we are worn down, we avoid potential failures, and we don't bring stubborn resolve to hardened resistance. No, what discouraged brains do is, "No, thank you. I'm not going to go into that meat grinder again." What worn down brains do is they become the place tenacity goes to die. So this time that we're living in presents for us a conundrum. It's calling us to wade into territory that is laden with complexity, this racial inequity thing, fraught with ancient wounds, territory in which our own human nature and our deep cultural habits often deceive us and point us in the wrong direction, territory where we do mess up and where we see a thousand different ways that our society is behaving badly, easy to get discouraged, easy to beat ourselves up, a thousand different discouraging things happening around us, and whoa, our brains tell us, that feels bad. Every survival neuron that we've got tells us, whew, don't go there again. Painful. Back away. Stop doing whatever you were doing. Stop going wherever you were going that is making you feel so bad. But here's the conundrum part. If we don't wade into this charged territory, if we don't rise above and learn more, and grow more, become less fragile and more emotionally capable, we will miss this historical moment. And we will come to the end of our days, and we will look back and have to tell the generations after us, perhaps our grandchildren, I'm sorry, I just wasn't able to put my hands to the work that was required to turn from our sin. Tenacity. Where does tenacity come from? Dogged commitment to a righteous path in the face of fierce resistance. Where does it come from? Well, in this lesson, I want to talk about four insights that our tradition has given us. Today, we'll cover just one. And the one that we're going to cover today was the topic of our very first lesson after quarantine, self-care. We're only going to come through this moment, I said that week, having become better people for it, or being better able to build a better world on the other side of it, will only be able to come through that way if we tend to our own mental and physical and relational and spiritual health. Self-care. So I want to revisit that important spiritual practice today. Because it's easy to see the relationship between tenacity and self-care if you just go to an extreme. So let's just imagine that you go long enough not taking care of your body. You go long enough not taking care of your mind, not taking care of your heart, not taking care of your soul. And where do you find yourself? You find yourself curled up in a ball, and you are spent. You find yourself doing what we do when we are spent like that. You find yourself shutting the world out. What you're not doing at that moment is engaging this moment in history. And so, in the extreme, we can see that, sure. But the challenge around self-care comes in the details. It's not easy to know even what self-care is. It's not easy to see how much of it we need. It's not easy to see when we've crossed the line from self-care into selfishness. Once again, here is the spiritual life insisting that we be people of discernment. Self-care, like many important spiritual principles, it's not here and it's not there, it's sometimes. It's sometimes here, then it's sometimes there, and it's sometimes somewhere in between. Discernment. Jeez, it would be so much easier if life was just cut and dried, right? Discernment and self-care. Well, self-care is further complicated by all of us having different personalities. For some, self-care is a little more instinctive. For others, it's more difficult. If you're really good at seeing problems that need fixing, but not as good as recognizing if it's your problem to fix or somebody else's problem, there's a good chance that self-care will be harder for you to discern. The how and the when are probably going to be a challenge. Or if, as we saw during our body awareness meditation, if you tend to ride roughshod over the sensations in your body, and boy, that's a lot of us. If it's easy for you to brush aside those physical indicators, those bodily warning lights, those bodily insights, if that's you, then discerning the how and the when of self-care probably going to be a challenge for your personality too. I imagine a lot of us are kind of surprised that masks have become such a political thing. even with the best counsel of our medical leaders, even with the rising rates of infection in all of these states, even as our nation is dropping further and further behind other nations who didn't politicize masks, it's still surprising that hyperpolarization has had as much power over us as it has had. Well, I was talking to a woman in our community this week who was in one of those contexts. She had to stand in line for a long time. And because of social distancing, the line stretched outside the door and it was hot. And people were irritated. And a lot of people weren't wearing masks. And the ones who were worked up by the ones who weren't. And a few hotheads were making militant statements about their personal rights. And in all of this context, her son remarked to her, "You know, Mom, there is not a lot of happy going on around here." Well, that's the setting. Here's the story. In that setting, she experienced a state of settled equilibrium. Now, she was out in the heat, too. The line was taking forever for her, too. But she said, "I saw the people." And yeah, several of them were behaving very badly. But here's the thing. I could see past the bad behavior, and I could see the inherent value and the preciousness and the humanity. I could see that along with all the other stuff. Well, I hope you can see where the story is heading, because you can get to tenacity from there. When we are able to let go of the lesser, when we're able to see the greater, when we can rise above the scripts that are being force-fed to all of us by the outrage industry, we can get to tenacity from there. You can get up and keep going when your energy isn't being sucked up by indignation or resentment. You can get to tenacity when your focus is not co-opted by smaller truths. When you find yourself in a state of interior equilibrium, you can do tenacious. When she was telling me the story, she said, "You know, Doug, maybe it's because we started that meditation challenge this week." And I thought, yeah, maybe not, because we'd only been doing it a couple days by then. But I have watched this woman practicing relational health, processing anxiety and upheaval in the context of deepening spiritual friendships. I have watched her practice self-awareness in many different contexts. I've watched her serve others so that she can shift the focus away from just herself. I've watched this woman for an extended time working the circle. And on that hot day, the work of self-care was bearing fruit. Her care for her own heart, her own mind, her own soul had built up a reservoir of capacity, an interior ability to see the truer truth, to grasp the bigger reality. And again, you can get to tenacity from there. Just before the virus, I did several weeks of a lesson, Finding God in All Things. I put a link to it in the live stream notes there, or you can just go to the website under the Resources tab. I spoke about how we experience the divine, how we access interior peace, how we find that interior equanimity, how we're able to let go of the lesser and embrace the greater when we spend time in the woods or in the garden. When we store up awe within ourselves by putting ourselves in the presence of things that are greater than ourselves. So often, we think of the spiritual practices, we sometimes call them spiritual disciplines. We often think of them as duty, responsibility. And in a sense, I guess that's true, because we do have a duty to care for ourselves. We are given this one life, this one mind, this one body and heart, and it is our duty to care for it. But the word duty seems like it kind of misses the point, because duty is an onerous term. It makes the process feel heavy, burdensome. It puts it into the realm of should and ought. And that's just exhausting. That's tiring. Ugh. Well, it's a shame that we frame the spiritual practices that way, because in fact, what they are is the accumulated wisdoms of generations gone before us about how to practice self-care. You see, we're not the first generation to not be very good at it. We're not the first generation to have trouble discerning the how and the when of self-care. That's a lot of us. And to us, the tradition is there to help us. So honey, the tradition tells us, you're going to need tenacity. You're going to need it to build a better world. And that means you're going to need self-care. And I know it's not always easy to figure out how self-care works. Zoning out in front of a screen, that can feel like self-care, but honey, you're going to need even more. You're going to need healthy, supportive relationships. You're going to need stillness. You're going to need quietness. You're going to need meditation. You're going to need a walk in the woods. You're going to need quiet time in the garden. You're going to need to focus on the well-being of others to help you get the focus off of yourself so you can see something bigger. You're going to need a whole basket of things because you're such a complex being. So here, ancient wisdom tells us, let me make it easier for you. Let me tell you how we figured out how to care for ourselves. People of our time will be tenacious people. And tenacious people will be able to discern the how and the when of effective self-care. And it turns out, work in the circle is a really good place to start self-care. And building spiritual friendships with whom you can do these practices, that's the best place to start working the circle. So here's an idea. Put your name on the Help Each Other Meditate This Summer document. See some names there. They're working the circle too. Find them in the directory. Get to know them. Talk about your practice together. Get comfortable with that. And then talk about your spiritual journey together, your soul. And along the way, hey, become tenacious. Along the way, become a person of our time. So indwelling spirit, aware of the wisdom of our bodies, aware of the inner wisdom of our hearts and minds, and the self-care to affect those levels of awareness in our lives. Tenacious people, may it be so in us and among us on this journey. Amen. Well, if you would, please prepare your tithes and offerings, which has come to mean if you get to keep your job during this pandemic, I would strongly encourage you to remember that spiritual community is a great place to invest, and this spiritual community is a great place to put your love and your energy and your time and the dollars that it takes for us to be a healthy community. You can do that by going to our website, the donate button, and there's a drop-down menu, and there will be four different ways. It's very easy, very intuitive. And as you're doing that, we got a few minutes left. Gene, tell me, what are people thinking about? What is stirring up in our hearts?
So let's see. Katie posted up, and she said, her comment was, tenacity is the gift of innate. At this time, I am learning the importance of not fighting but listening. Before justice, we got to have understanding. And it would be really easy to move forward in a tenacious fight for justice, but discernment.
Katie and I share a personality type, and we both know the pitfalls of what I just said today. Because tenacity, when what you're being tenacious about is dumbass stupid, that is not particularly spiritual or helpful. So yes, what Katie said, pay close attention, hear the word of the Lord. Yes, for all of you who have personalities like ours, pay attention to what Katie just said. What else?
So Angie said, this is the thing with me. Anytime I'm relaxing, I feel guilty. I'm a one. COVID has actually helped. I've been forced to slow down, and it's proven how restorative self-care can be.
Yeah. That's good. Well, I don't think Angie's alone. I think our whole culture kind of has defined value in ways that force busyness. When we were first rethinking religion, we didn't know that we were going to have to rethink our narrative of God. We didn't know that we were going to have to rethink our narrative of what this whole sin thing means. We didn't know that we were going to have to rethink the core things. We just knew that our religion wasn't working for us. One of the first threads that we began to pull on was the pain of busyness. Because we all realized that, hey, if we're going to restitch the torn fabric of community, that's going to take time and energy and effort. And oh my God, we do not have time and energy and effort. And why don't we have time and energy and effort is because we've got these messages just coming at us again and again and again that tell us, do more, be busy more, you're valuable if you do this. And so the whole concept of listening to that interior voice that tells us what to dismantle, what Angie said, boy, that's really important. Once again, hear now the word of the Lord. One more.
So Jay France commented his comment.
Who did?
Jay.
Oh, okay.
So Jay says, the signal-to-noise ratio is really high these days. Meditation and self-care are just absolutely necessary.
Yeah. I like that, signal-to-noise ratio. All right, that was good. That was great, Jay. One more. That was short, though. Have one more.
Yeah, another short one. Michelle commented on spiritual practices, and she says, not shoulds and oughts, but tools and invitations.
Perfect. Not should. Oh, the link to the document? Oh, okay. So Lindsay's just telling me that the link to the meditation document is the wrong one. As soon as we get off, I'll fix that. Yeah. All right. Well, if you would, please put your hand on your heart and let us remember as we go that we are all carriers of the indwelling divine. And that means that within us is everything that we need to navigate this moment with tenacity. Everything that we need, all the virtue, all the character that we need to be people of our time is there within us because the indwelling spirit is there within us. And if you would, extend your other hand to our city. And let's look as we go through our week for opportunities to share what is in us with the people that we live with, people that we work with, the people who show up in the live stream that go to church with us, looking for opportunities to share the divine that is within us with others, looking for opportunities to repair and heal our worlds. Amen. God bless you. We are dismissed. And head on over to the Zoom chat and find out what's going on there. See you next week. If these recordings help you move forward on your spiritual journey, we hope you'll take an ownership stake in the community and support the health and well-being of the community. You can go to our website, commonthreadchurch.org. The donate button is at the top of the page for your computer's browser, at the bottom of the page for your phones.